Welcome to Card Knock Life, episode 105. I'm Corey, and here's Daryl.
Yo.
Right, thanks for tuning in on Twitch. If you're live on Twitch here, by the way, if you are unaware, we didn't formally announce that, but in the last 4 or 5 weeks of recording, we have been streaming live at 5 o'clock Central Time on Twitch.tv/card_knock_life. You can find that link in any of the previous show notes on our website. And when we get to it, we always upload the videos from those captures too. If you want to see them in the past, you can watch the live streams of those.
When I don't screw up the live stream and turn off Corey's audio for the first 25 minutes.
Yeah, that's really the thing.
Because that happened the last time we streamed.
Well, we took last week off.
Yeah, my bad. I didn't mean to do that.
We took last week off, but we're back again today. There's a lot to talk about today, but I think we're going to kind of keep things a little concise because with this big Dominaria leak, we've got to just kind of focus our conversation. And I think we'll refrain from going over all of the spoilers. I think other podcasts may be doing that, but let's take them as they come. When they're officially spoiled and handled by Wizards, I think then we address them. But there are definitely a few that I want to talk about today. I know you do too.
Yeah, there's going to be a couple exceptions to that rule, but for now we're going to take them as they come after that.
I've been playing a lot of Modern this week. I want to talk about Modern. We had a couple of Modern events the last weekend as well, but we'll get to that after the Dominaria leaks. And before we get into the podcast, so let me just mention that we are sponsored by ManaTraders.com. So I want to just give a shout out to ManaTraders.com, the most awesome source of card rental on the internet and in paper. I use it for Moto all the time. You can rent an entire deck of cards and ship it back when you're done with it.
Yeah, I've been playing a lot of Standard. There's a 5-hour deck that has a lot of expensive cards in it that I would not want to buy for Standard. That ManaTraders is perfect. I can rent them all and then give them back.
And then not worry about it. Yeah, I haven't found the time to get into Standard yet, but I've been enticed. You know, I'm looking at it and I want to play some, I want to give these Grixis decks a shot. There's a lot of really cool stuff and I'm certainly going to fire up that ManaTraders account and try to rent one of those. By the way, if you're interested in trying ManaTraders yourself, you can do so. Put in the promo code CardKnockLife, all one word, at checkout, and you get 14% off your first 4 months of your subscription, no matter what service or what tier you choose. So let us know what you think of it, too. We love it. Yep. Anyways, we're going to get into it. So Dominaria. So my first reaction to this, Daryl, when this was announced as a leak was, Jesus Christ, again? Do we not learn?
Ah, crap. Yeah, that was my reaction too.
Yeah.
But then we saw some cards, and it was cool.
Did you look through all the spoilers, though? I tried my best not to.
I saw the spoiler. I scrolled through it, but didn't really pay much attention.
Yeah.
There were a couple of cards that caught my eye. I think we're probably going to talk about both of them. And then I saw Sagas. You couldn't not see them when you looked through it. And I'm like, well, what the hell is this? Like, what's going on here? I don't understand.
Let's just give a little bit of context for this conversation before we hop into the spoilers right away.
Sure, absolutely.
So basically the release notes were leaked. And basically the release notes are a big Word document. That was originally, it was a Chinese version that got leaked, but now Wizards responded to this leak by putting out 7 different languages of release documents and just making them readily accessible to everyone. So translation errors didn't get in the way of people's understanding of the set before they really had a chance to control the leaking of the cards or the spoiling of the cards. So, control the leaking, I suppose. They don't control the leaking. That's the problem. There's a lot of information in this document, including the entire set written out in text form. No art has been released, and they say that there's a lot of newness to the art that they are anxious to show and share with us. We haven't seen everything yet. We found that out today with a Saga card that was leaked, or was spoiled, officially spoiled, I should say. And so we'll talk about that in a second. But before we do, I just want to mention Dominaria is like, this is like the land that all of the sets took place on prior to what, Mirrodin block? Is that correct?
Yeah.
So it's like a giant history of Magic that includes like all of the Urza stuff that was going on, like all of the Phyrexians. There's a lot of really like iconic Magic the Gathering stuff in Dominaria. So this set harkens back to a lot of that, and it's super exciting for that reason. There are some things in this set, and we're not going to talk about them today, but they're like very much like the new versions of like old cards that we really are nostalgic for. So that's very exciting to me. Mechanics have been released, as well as old mechanics are coming back. Kicker is returning in this set. And there's an emphasis on legendary creatures and legendary permanents as well. But the one that Daryl's referring to is Saga. And Sagas, not to be confused with Urza's Saga, one of the Urza sets, is basically the sprockets and the sprocket and assembling the, what do they call them, contraptions in the unset.
Yeah.
But Daryl, why don't you enlighten us on what a Saga is, how it works, and which one you wanted to talk about.
So the Saga, Sagas will essentially get Saga counters when it enters the battlefield, and after your draw step, add a lore counter and sacrifice it after lore counter number 3. Once you add a lore counter, the number that is on the number for the lore counter will trigger. So I'm gonna talk about the one that I wanted to. I can't remember the name of it. It's like 5 and white for Enchantment Saga. When it comes into play, it gets a counter, and when the first counter goes onto it, you destroy all the lands.
Wow.
And then the next 2 Saga counters return 2 lands to play for each player.
Remind me of the cost for that one. Did you say 4 and a white?
5 and a white.
Five and a white. Okay, so it's pretty costly. But go on. What do you think of this one?
So this one is really interesting because it's one of those things that if you can get out ahead of the mana curve with like mana dorks or artifacts, you have this permanent that Armageddon's, put your opponent behind, and then if you have a way to blink permanents, you just get to Armageddon your opponent into the ground to where they don't get to have lands while you're beating them down with a creature or something. So it's like something that can seal the game very well when you have a larger creature in play.
Yeah.
I'm 100% not sure where that's going to apply, but it has piqued my interest that you have this blinkable Armageddon.
Yeah, that is pretty cool.
Let's talk about the official one since we really know that this one actually exists. Well, the picture for these is really...
We know that these all exist. I mean, these are confirmed. This was released by the Wizards website.
Yeah.
But okay, the one that came out today, the official spoiler today, was a black Saga.
I've got it over Corey's face right now.
Yeah. Okay, great.
Sorry, Corey, you get
perfect
no face.
Place to put it. It's called Phyrexian Scriptures, which is first of all, it's awesome. The art is awesome, I should say. And it's very much that nostalgic, like, Phyrexian vibe. It's got the mask that is the set symbol for Apocalypse right on the card. And in the watermark of the card, we've got the, like, new Phyrexian... that is the Phyrexian symbol, isn't it? The circle with the line through it.
Yeah, correct.
So what this does, this is 2 and 2 black for an Enchantment Saga. Put a +1/+1 counter on up to 1 creature. That creature becomes an artifact in addition to its other types. That's the first activation. The second, it's called Chapter. The second chapter is destroy all non-artifact creatures. And the third chapter is exile all cards from all opponents' graveyards.
Yeah, you're lagging a little bit. This is basically standard Damnation.
Yeah.
Because there are not a lot of artifact creatures that Kaladesh is going to rotate out. All artifact creatures, because like the Gear Hulks, Walking Ballista, Thopters, like those are our artifact creatures right now. When this comes out, all of the artifact creatures are going to rotate. And if there's not a bunch of artifact creatures in the set, this is basically a Damnation with Suspend 1.
Yeah.
If you have a big creature, you can put a counter on it, it becomes an artifact, and you untap and you Damnation, essentially, for free. So you invest all your money up front, get to keep a creature, and Damnation. So there's a lot to like there for, like, mid-range decks.
Yeah, I can see that. The +1/+1 on a creature is kind of a thing to pay attention to, too. I know we've got, like, +1/+1 counters matter decks and, like, our Winding Constrictor and stuff like that. But having a Winding Constrictor on the table and playing your Phyrexian Scriptures, activating the +1/+1 counter on it is, you know, nothing to scoff at. Also... The interaction with this and like Walking Ballista and things like that is kind of interesting. Now that seems honestly is probably the most insignificant part of the card is the +1/+1 counter. But that seems to be like kind of a great sideboard piece for a deck like that.
So that interaction is actually going to rotate out. Walking Ballista is in Kaladesh. So when this launches, Kaladesh goes and we have Ixalan and this in standard.
Oh, is Constrictor as well? It is, isn't it?
Yeah, it's in Kaladesh.
In standard. By the way, shout out to whatsinstandard.com. As awkward and awful as the rotation in standard is, whatsinstandard.com will tell you how long you're going to see these sets. Kaladesh and Aether Revolt until quarter 4, 2018.
which is when does Dominaria launch before that? And then
Dominaria is going to come out at the end of April.
Yeah. So okay. So it's the core set is when Walking Ballista and Friends rotate. So this is actually going to be a little awkward for a few months, but still not bad as long as you know your opponents don't load up on Ballistas and Thopters, you'll be fine. This definitely will see play in the blue black control deck though, because really the only creature they play is Torrential Gearhulk.
Yeah.
So you don't kill your Torrential Gearhulks and you have this one sided like this Wrath of God. Like that's completely insane.
Yeah, that seems great. Talking about like the structure of this card and like how it was created, I do remember Mero saying when we were talking about the unstable, he was bringing up the contraptions and the assembling contraptions and spinning the sprockets and whatnot as a thing that they had considered doing for like standard legal sets. This to me is that, right? This has got to be. And the way that the card looks, and we haven't really talked about this much on the cast for those of you who are not watching this card being placed over my face on the Twitch stream. It's like kind of vertically oriented where the art is half of the card from right to left, I should say. So on the left side of the card, it's divided into three rows with the three different sprockets, quote unquote, or three different portions.
Yeah, I removed the card from your face. I figured you'd like to have a face.
Oh, I appreciate that.
But yeah, no problem. This card is this idea is really interesting. I don't know how playable it's going to be because we've never seen something like this before in a real Magic set, and it does take multiple turns to get the full value out of. So, like, it's interesting to me if the value comes from the early pieces of it. So, like, this one that we just looked at, the value comes from parts one and two. You know, Tormod's Crypting your opponent is not particularly useful all the time. So, like, you're not going to have a lot of value out of stage three.
Yeah.
You might against, like, blue-black control or anything with, like, Search for Escanta in their deck. But, like, other than that, you're not really getting a lot other than, like, bogging your opponent so they don't Scarab God you. Like, you can kill their Scarab God in your draw step, then you get to bog their Scarab God or whatever. But, like, that's pretty much it. So, it's interesting to me that I think that one's going to be extremely powerful because a lot of the value comes from the parts up front. But if the parts up front aren't as good as like the last part, it's going to be really hard to see if that card is going to be super playable because decks like Mono Red will like automatically put pressure on like how good the sagas are because you have to wait for the payoffs.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. All right. Well, let's talk about some of the other cards in this set. There's maybe one or two other ones I want to touch on today, and then we'll kind of wait out the official spoilers for them.
Yep.
But one that's been a hot topic lately is this clearly pointed hate card towards Tron and Storm decks. It's so obviously designed as a sideboard card for Modern. And that is a 2-mana artifact, and I can't even think of the name of it right now. It's hard to look it on here. What's that called, Daryl?
Neither can I. I know the card you're talking about. I don't know.
Well, basically what it does, it's a 2-mana artifact that says if a land would produce more than one mana, it produces one colorless mana instead. And each spell that is cast on a turn costs one additional colorless mana to cast for each spell that was cast before it. So
yeah.
What are your thoughts on this thing? Is this truly the Tron hate that is needed?
I mean, it just dies to Oblivion Stone.
It does.
Like, it dies to all the hate that everything that shuts down Tron dies to that's not like Fulminator Mage, which is dies to Oblivion Stone, dies to Nature's Claim. Tron's just going to have those naturally on their sideboard. Like, whatever. It dies to Vandal Blast, like, whatever mass artifact removal your opponent is playing to beat Affinity.
Yeah.
You know, it just dies to all that stuff that's already in their sideboard. So it's not like it wasn't like, it's like a random thing that is not type that they're like ready to deal with, and then all of a sudden you just plop it on the table and you're like, I don't have anything for that. Now, like, if you put this in a play next to like a Stony Silence, I think your Tron opponent is straight up dead. Like, they have to have their Nature's Claim, and if they don't have it, nope.
Yeah.
This card's insane against Storm, though. Like, it makes their cantrips worse, it makes their rituals worse.
It seems to be the case that cards like this are designed to slow down Tron decks and similar. You know, you talk about how Oblivion Ring or Oblivion Stone can kill this thing. And that's, you know, obviously the case. But when they can't produce 8 mana off of their Tron lands, it's going to take them a lot longer to do it. So it buys you some major time, which is true for, like, Spreading Seas or Blood Moon in the same respect. But those decks are just so threatening because they do have that inevitability where they're just going to eventually draw enough lands to do what they want to do anyway. But that's what you need is time against those decks, really. And this provides that. So I think it is good. I don't doubt that it will see play.
I mean, it does the same thing that, like, Spreading Seas and Blood Moon do, which is, like, eventually they'll just draw lands and draw out of it. Same as they will with Spreading Seas and Blood Moon. Spreading Seas and Blood Moon give them the random upside of drawing the right land to just shoot to the moon, whereas this is just like, all right, you have to draw 7 or 8 lands to get out from under it. So, like, it does give you that benefit of forcing them to draw specific lands. Like, land outs don't matter. So, but it's the same as Spreading Seas and Blood Moon. If it's not backed up with pressure, it's not going to matter.
Yeah, but I mean, that's the point that I'm trying to make. It is the same thing. This is, like, much more accessible to more decks in that it's colorless. It costs 2 mana. And that's really the thing is, Blood Moon costs 3, right? And 3 mana is the turn that the opponent has already assembled Tron, you know? So this being one turn earlier than that, it means all the difference in the world. And beyond that, it is fetchable, it is findable off of Ancient Strength. It's a colorless spell. So, I don't know. It's got a lot of things to offer that Blood Moon doesn't.
Yeah, it is a hate piece that can be played off of Ancient Strength. Yeah, it does. You're not wrong. Certain decks, different pieces. Like, might blue-white kind of go down in value because this card exists? No. Because, like, Spreading Seas, cantrips, and that's a big deal, and then it can mana screw your opponent. This doesn't really affect Storm, but it's not a big enough trade-off. You know, Blood Moon, same can be said, that the mana screw effect is more important than, you know, potentially more important than the Storm upside. Like, it depends on what deck you're playing, how afraid you are of one or the other. So, like, well, the questions are, what decks don't fall in the Spreading Seas and Blood Moon intersection that want this effect? And if they exist, is there not another better effect they can play? The answer is probably no, there's not something better. But, like, what are those decks? Like, right. Mono Black.
Well, I can think of a few cards that are kind of, like, corner case good against both strategies. You know, like, things that prevent your opponent from searching. Their library is good against, like, Storm and against Tron. But this is just very, very specifically pointed at those decks. And,
sure.
And, once again, is much more accessible to more decks. Yeah. I think that this sort of addresses the problem that we've been having lately and that's been a big topic of discussion lately is Modern is so vast and you only have 15 cards in your sideboard, so you can't really account for all of the decks that are out there properly. And so this is a card that basically fills the role of two sideboard slots in just one card. And I think that's really important for Modern. Modern needs more of that. If it only had Exile's Graveyards when it came into play, then it would be the ultimate piece of sideboard technology.
Yeah. It only had what?
Exile Graveyards when it came into play. Rest in peace.
Oh, Lord, yeah. Okay. I'm so joking. You're asking for all of it. Got it. All right. So I think that pretty well covers the card you're going to talk about.
Yeah.
Mine is a little more controversial, and it's Mox Amber.
Okay.
So it's a 0 mana legendary artifact that makes a mana of any color legendary farm you control. 0 mana accelerants are scary. This one is less so because you have to have a colored permanent, and it has to be legendary. There aren't a lot of legendary 1-drops in Modern.
Yeah.
But there are 2 really big legendary 2-drops. And that's Tholia and Brawl.
Sure. Brawl is a big deal. Tholia is a little bit anti-synergy with this one because it makes it cost 1 mana anyway.
Right. And so that's my question is, like, people are like, this is going to spawn archetypes. It's a huge deal. And when you look at, like, the legendary creatures in Modern at 1 mana and 0 mana, there are none, and 2 mana, you're kind of limited in your scope. You're looking at stuff like Aura of Piraj, the, like, token maker from Kaladesh, Kithian, Riz the Redeemed, Tholia, Brawl. Like,
Isamaru.
There are a lot of stinkers. Isamaru. there's the, like, blue-white one from Kaladesh that, like, is unblockable, that has Embalm. There's that guy.
Okay.
Like, Timuret the Murder King. Like, you're not looking great. And so the question is, like, in what world can these turn one, these, like, 0 mana accelerants actually provide you enough upside because they need to be paired with legendary permanents. Now, it might be that there's some legendary permanent in Dominaria that costs one that's playable, and all of a sudden we're shit.
We are what? You cut out there.
But, like, this card, this card screams problems to me. Like, it's either going to be, like, this really broken 4-of, it's going to cause a ton of format problems, or it's just going to be, like, this bulk mythic.
Yeah.
There's no way this card's not a mythic.
It's for sure a mythic. I don't think it's bulk by any means. I think a card like this will find play in some deck. Someone's going to try to use it in some kind of combo strategy. I'm thinking of the cards in Modern that already get played that are like affordable, quote unquote, legendary creatures. And Norrin the Wary is one, although it's really awkward with this because when you play this and Norrin's in play, he gets exiled and you can't use his mana anyway. But that's one that gets played in a deck. I think that the Storm deck really wants this with Baral. That seems really strong.
So I thought of really bad combo strategies. And the first one that came to my mind, there's two actually. Grisselbrand likes free mana sources.
Okay, but you have to have the Grisselbrand in play, right?
Right. But like the problem you have sometimes when you're going off is that you just need mana.
Oh, I see.
You've already hit your land drop.
You've already reanimated it, and you just want to basically draw a bunch of cards, pop this into play, and then, you know, finish her.
Yeah, you need mana to, like, put the second guy in the play to kill them.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And Cheerios.
Yeah, Cheerios does play. Isn't one of those guys? It's Ram, right?
Yeah. So you have extra mana sources. So, like, it can't cast Retract, which is the problem, because Retract is a blue card. Mm-hmm. But it gives you extra mana for like Grapeshot and tax effects and things like that. So I don't know. It feels like you would try and figure out how to get a synergistic blue legendary permanent in there so you can cast Retract and go nuts. Like Ereo. That's a blue legendary permanent that could just be really annoying with this card.
What is that exactly?
It's a 1/1 flyer for 2. When you play 4 spells, flip it. It's from Kamigawa. And it flips into counter the first spell every opponent plays every turn.
Yeah, that seems pretty great with this.
Yeah. I don't know what world we're Rayo-ing people, but, like, it's possible. Because, like, you can just, like, turn to play a Rayo, like, Mox Amber, Cantrip, something else. Like, you need one more spell at that point to be able to, like, blow your opponent into the sun.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know, man. Like, that seems real dangerous, too.
That does seem pretty good.
It's one of those things that's going to be, like, super dangerous or super awful.
You know what this is, Daryl? This is the Tybalt enabler right here. Tybalt is the most affordable planeswalker there is, right? So he provides...
Get out of here. Just get out of here, man. We're done.
All right, I'm getting out.
We're shutting down the podcast. I can't do this anymore.
All right. Well, there's a lot in this set that I really want to talk about. I'm sure you do too. However, we're gonna contain ourselves. Let's keep it at that for today and talk about the specifics as we get them revealed. The art is a big deal on this one because of, like I mentioned before, the nostalgic value. I think that there's a lot that remains to be seen yet, and we've already seen some new card designs with the Saga. So I'm interested to see, you know, what these things are starting to look like. There is the return of the story cards, the story spotlight cards, which were very cool last time around. And there's some new formatting things that should be interesting as well. I know now that we're going to have between the card text and the flavor text, there's a horizontal line to separate those two. They've also changed he or she gender pronouns to they when they're referring to players.
That's a big deal.
It is a big deal. And they've also changed a little bit of the rules on how you attack planeswalkers. Now you would attack them directly rather than redirecting damage to them. And beyond that, this is the weirdest one of them all for older players, is there's no longer a mana pool, or it's no longer referred to as a mana pool. Lands will add green. That's it. They add green, or they add black, or they add blue. They do not add black, blue, or green to your mana pool. Which is fine.
So, that leads me to the question. Does mana still... disappear between...
Daryl, you're going to have to repeat that question. You cut out pretty bad.
Oh, so like that affects cards like Savage Vetmaw. because like the mana doesn't leave your pool between phases. So do you just get like 6 mana for the rest of your turn to use?
I'm sure that that will be a rat.
But cards like Upwelling, what does that really? Yeah, what does that do? I just, you know, these are all things that I think of because I play a bunch of EDH. Like, what the hell happens to these like actual EDH staples like Omnath?
We're gonna need to take a break and fix this delay. It's pretty obnoxious. So let's take a short break. We're gonna come back and we're gonna finish up conversation on this set, and then we're gonna actually jump into Modern. So stay tuned. Karmak Life is supported by The Discard. Visit thediscard.com for a variety of Magic content, including news, set reviews, limited, and constructed strategy. All right, we're back to it. Sorry about that. My face is causing problems, we found. I'm going to stop displaying my video. I think that's causing us to slow down for some reason. I've got a really big face, and it's just too much to fit through the internet tubes.
His face is huge. Donald Trump, huge.
All right, this will be much better. That was, like, really hard to communicate, and I apologize we didn't do something about it sooner.
Yeah.
We were talking about the mana pool and the lack thereof. I'm going to spoil another card for us. I know I said I was going to try not to, but we got to talk about this one because it pertains to this whole mana pool situation, and that's Llanowar Elves is back in Dominaria, which is, like, kind of a big deal for Standard. But it simply says, tap, add green. Boom, done, simple. And I think that the point is we're going to keep things as simple and simplistic as possible for new players. There's really no reason we need that extra bit of text. I had a conversation with a friend, and we kind of both agreed that when you're writing something, like maybe for a paper or something, usually the right way to do it is in the fewest words possible. And the same is true for Magic. There's no reason that we need to have all that extra information to, you know, talk about having one green symbol to use for other cards.
Sure.
So I'm down. I'm on board. I can't imagine that they wouldn't errata cards like Upwelling and the one that you mentioned before, our face problems.
Yeah.
So we'll wait and see how that all goes. They did say refrain from asking questions until we have a chance to address these things. And as a teacher, I can totally relate to that. When I hand out a piece of music, kids are like, "What's this?" And I'm like, "Just wait, we'll get there." So
yeah, fair enough.
Having had this spoiled, I should say, we are going to just wait for clarification when it's due. Anyways,
that's fair.
Let's move on. There's something I want to talk about. I think it'll take up the bulk of the rest of the podcast unless there's anything else you wanted to cover this week.
Ship it.
Okay. Well, like I said, I've been playing a lot of Modern, and Modern is in a very interesting place these days. I think Modern was in a very interesting place before the unbans, and it got even more interesting after the unbans. Some might argue less interesting. But the pillars of the format have shifted. I think that there's a new emphasis on certain decks. I want to talk about those and see if maybe we can even identify the same decks as the pillars of the format, quote unquote. But just before the unbans happened, we had like Hollowon and Mardu Pyromancer sneaking up. There were new decks being created in this old format, which is really cool. You know, we've got new decks popping up every day. So now that Jace and Bloodbraid have been unbanned, and we really are kind of unsure as to how to include them in our decks and what to do with them in Modern, there's a lot of kind of sort of uncertainty about what's the best thing out there and what's the best strategy. But I think that's starting to sort of take shape now that we've got a few results under our belt. Now, before we even talk anything about the Star City Games tournament that happened last weekend, I want to talk about personal experience from Modo, because the way that they roll out the results on the dailies now, they just give you this big dumping of decks, and it's basically like every possible deck that's 5-0'd an event. So it doesn't quite tell you that there were 37 Tron decks and there was only one Blue-White Control deck. Instead, it tells you there's one Tron deck and one Blue-White Control deck that's listed. So from my experience, I've identified a few decks as the most commonly played Modern decks these days, and maybe the most difficult for a plethora of the decks that I've been testing to beat. Have you been playing Modern enough to identify such things, Daryl?
I've been playing a ton of Standard.
A ton of Standard, okay.
I have been. I've been getting my head beat in with the 5-color ramp deck and not having a care in the world. It's been a delightful time.
Well, then this will be interesting. I want you to tell me what you expect to be the most commonly played decks in the last 2 weeks or
so,
based on what you see in the results.
I'm not even going to look at the results. I'm just going to spitball it off the top of my head what I would expect the best decks to be.
Yeah, go ahead. Pick five.
Jund.
Yep.
Mono Green Tron.
Okay.
Another Bloodbraid Elf deck, whether it's Teemer or it's Naya Zoo with like Collected Company or like just like a bunch of value 3-drop creatures.
Yep.
I'm not sure what Jace deck. My first thought is Grixis, because discard is really good against Bloodbraid Elf, because you take Bloodbraid Elf and they don't get their free spells. But if there's a control deck, it's going to be Grixis. And then I'm going to have to play like, I'm going to have to say Black Red Casino. That's what I call the Hollowed One deck. Because it's still just super powerful and can just casino you on turn one or two. And you're just like, well, I'm dead. All right. Fair enough.
Yeah. Well,
but those would be my five guesses.
Those are pretty reasonable guesses. And now keep in mind that this is based on my own experiences, but I've played a lot of Moto and I do play a lot of Moto. I think that the three most commonly played decks since the unbanning, at least how it's shaken out, are, yes, Jund for sure is one. Another one is Burn. There's just been a ton of Burn. And it might be that people are just taking advantage of others trying to figure out the format, and they just want to play the fastest way to get to zero.
So let me tell you why Burn is really good right now.
Why?
Turn one, Fetch Shock, Thoughtseize.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of...
Your opponent wants to start at 15. You only need 5 burn spells. Like, deal. Absolutely. I'm in.
Yeah. So there's a lot of Burn. There's a lot of Tron. And there's a lot of... I already said Jund. So the other one is Tron. There's a lot of Tron. Misspoke. But
I wasn't sure if Burn would be insane still, or if it would get held down by the like plethora of Jace decks, by like the Jace decks interacting with the Burn spells and creatures with like early spell snares and discard, and then slamming Jace, whittling through the opponent's leftover cards, and then just fate sealing them into nothingness.
Those decks don't really exist. So they do. People are trying them, but that's certainly not what I would consider one of the top 5 decks right now. Really not a lot of Jace happening. In fact, there's just a lot of like big mana and super aggressive attack decks. And I think that those three decks, Tron, Jund, and Burn, right now, if you were to go to an event this weekend, you have to be able to beat those three. And if you can't beat those three, if you've got a bad matchup against any one of those, you're in for a really long day. I've been testing that Naya Bloodbraid Elf deck for a while. I talked about that 2 weeks ago on the podcast. I was really psyched about that. In the first week, it was very good. I 5-0'd a league and 4-1'd twice in a row. And I was thinking that it was like the deck. But then I started running into a bunch of Tron decks. And there's not a lot that deck can do against Tron, despite having like some Ghost Quarters and Knight of the Reliquaries in the deck. It's just like keeping up with that is not even worth trying. You just got to race.
I mean, is your deck Collected Company deck, or is it just like beatdown deck?
It was like a Bloodbraid in place of Collected Company, like green white value. Like it was like a mid range deck. It was a more mid range deck than Jund, and it was good at beating Jund, but it lost to Tron, and that was enough to make me put it away.
I was asking because like if your mid range like Bloodbraid deck. If you're playing like Collected Company, you could get away with like a bunch of Mages of the Moons.
Yeah, could.
And then just like blow your opponent out.
Yeah, I thought about putting just straight up Blood Moon in the deck to get off of Bloodbraid Elf, but that's kind of where I'm going with this. So hold on. The next thought was I didn't want to lose to Tron anymore, so I wanted to look into like a blue white mid range deck. And I was thinking like, what's good against Tron? Well, there are decks that main deck. Four Spreading Seas, and there are decks that main deck Field of Ruin, and there are decks that main deck 8 of all of those. And those are like the blue-white decks, right?
Yeah.
And so that seems to be the best option against Tron, because I just have all of those ways of slowing them down or stopping them.
Of interacting with their mana, yeah.
However, we talked about the inevitability before, and it's like you can play a Spreading Seas on an Urza land, but it's eventually going to go away, or they're just going to have more cards to find that, you know, another copy of that land.
Yeah, or it's just going to be a land that can cast them, you know, an Ugin or something, and then you just get wrecked.
Yeah, so it only does so much. It really just prevents, like, you know, one turn of getting smashed by Ugin or Ulamog. So that was a little discouraging too for that reason, though that deck was good against Jund with all the planeswalkers that I was running. And it was good against, it was decent against Burn. I like Blessed, Blessed, whatever. The one Alliance. For, Blessed Alliance, yeah. Then I'm looking at the results from this weekend, and I think that the best way is to go even harder on the Destroy Land plan, and that just might be the
premium... Blood Moon, Stone Rains? Just like...
Blood Moon, Stone Rain, Molten Rain, Mulvali, Acid Moss.
Jesus.
So I think
what a world we live in, where we're casting Mulvali, Acid Moss for on turn three. Lordy day. All right.
So we've got an open where Andrew Wilbers wins with Green Red Ponza.
I mean, I'm gonna look at the deck now because I'm always interested. I like to kill a man's land as much as the next man.
Yeah.
This person said no to Mulvali Acid Moss. They wanted all three mana Stone Rains because they have four Bloodbraid Elves.
Now this is a deck that I looked at, Daryl, and I considered before building the Naya deck, but I didn't want to play Bloodbraid Elf and hit like an Arbor Elf or a Utopia Sprawl. However, apparently that's okay to do when you can also hit like a Blood Moon or a Molten Rain.
I like that he cut all the frills and just said you've got to beat Inferno Titan with like two lands. Go for it.
Yeah,
I'd love to see you try that one.
Now, he can also hit Nissa Vastwood Seer, Nissa Voice of Zendikar.
Yeah, that one I'm not so sure about.
That's a juicy Bloodbraid off target when you're up against control.
Right, but like in my version of the world, when you just want a Domri Raid?
No, not with this deck, because it doesn't. Well, I don't think you do. I think you want this. You want to just go wide and.
I mean, that's fair. I just like Domri Raid. Was the thing I thought of.
Yeah, Domri Raid's good. That's the one I was playing in the Zoo deck. But this is not... I don't think this is the deck for that.
No, not the deck for that? All right, fair enough.
Let's go on the list. This has got the Arbor Elf Utopia Sprawl package. Utopia Sprawl, by the way, is a much-needed reprint, and it's coming out on Friday in Masters 25. Thank the Lord.
Yeah. The
card's like $4. It's got four Arbors, four Utopia Sprawls, two Birds of Paradise, four Bloodbraid Elf, of course, three Inferno Titans. I've seen decks like this running Inferno Titans, but not the full three. We really want to burn some faces with this guy.
Yeah.
Four Tireless Tracker, one Courser of Kruphix, two Pia and Karan Nalar, which has become a staple of Modern. It has been like a sideboard mainstay for like Grixis decks.
It's red Lingering Souls.
Yeah, it's like, really good.
Yeah, red Lingering Souls is insane.
Yeah, it's got one Chandra, Torch of Defiance, one Nissa, Voice of Zendikar, four Blood Moon, four Utopia Sprawl, I already said that, two Bolt, only two, three Molten Rain, and four Stone Rain. Then it's got a bunch of lands, including a Kessig Wolf Run.
Yeah.
Sometimes you gotta trample with that Inferno Titan.
Teach man a fish, you'll feed him for a day. Kill a man's land, and you'll starve him out to death. Sideboard's got some Trinispheres for when you destroy all the lands of the Storm player and they can never play the game again. Kitchen Finks for burn. Obviously, Baleloth for burn. Scavengers for burn. Ancient Grudges for affinity. A Thrun, another Chandra, some Angers, and a Shatterstorm. So
my point with this is I think that this is a really great choice. I was a little bit unsure of the whole Ponza thing at first, and I thought that it's a little bit like Tunnel Vision on a few decks. But those decks are just so prevalent that apparently it's possible to just take down an entire open with such a thing.
So here's my thing.
Yeah.
I want to know the look on this guy's face when he goes, turn one Arbor Elf, and his opponent goes, turn one Sleight of Hand. And then after post board, he just untaps and goes, land, Trinisphere, go.
Yeah, that's...
I wonder how that felt for him. Because then you just followed up with Stone Rain, Molten Rain, Stone Rain, Blood Moon, go. And your opponent's just like, well, I can't cast a spell ever in this game.
Yeah.
Thanks for playing. Like, that was fun.
That's enough to slow... That slows him down enough to just take over entirely with the land destruction. You know, they can find their wipe away, but by the time they have, they've already lost three or four lands out of it.
They can't cast the wipe away.
Yeah. Now, there are some decks that can stand up to this pretty well, but the decks that I identified, Jund, Tron, and Burn, have, like, either a greedy mana base or like a very important mana base in the case of Tron. But I think even Burn is pretty susceptible to, like, even a Blood Moon doesn't seem terrible against Burn until you consider the fact that they need their white for 8 of their spells in their deck. And if they're drawing duds, that's no good for them. So, I don't know. I think that this is a good choice right now. Destroying lands is in style.
Yeah, I've never said no to a good land destruction deck. I'm the guy that has definitely Restoration handled a few Terastodons in EDH for fun and profit.
Yeah.
And my friends don't really like me much anymore. But yeah, this is not what I expected to win. If you had told me that this was the deck I'd have seen win in the Open this weekend, I might have called you crazy.
Yeah. Now, there was a lot of Storm this weekend, too. I was surprised to see that. Caleb Shearer, of course, is a Storm guru. With Gift Storm. The finals included this Ponza deck against a different Storm deck. So it seems like maybe that's another situation where people are being like, hey, you forgot about me. Watch me combo out while you try to dirtle with your Jace the Mind Sculptor. And that seems like a good plan as well. The Classic had quite a bit of Storm, too. And there's one deck I want to talk about in the Classic that also does a good job of attacking the meta.
I think I know which one it is, but go ahead.
This is the 10th place Esper Taxis deck. Is that what you're talking about?
Oh, that was not the deck I wanted to talk about.
Okay. Well, this is another one, as I was kind of thinking to myself, what is a good way to attack Tron? I was really kind of angry. I was angsty towards Tron after losing to it so many times, and I wanted to just play the deck that did the most damage to them so I could, you know, avenge my previous losses. And I thought to myself, well, there's a deck that Ghost Quarters with Leonin Arbiters on the table, and that seems pretty good against Tron. And that would be Death and Taxis. This deck, however, does not play Leonin Arbiter. This is blue, black, white, Esper Taxis with fetch lands.
It plays a giant pile of Aven Mind Sensors.
Yeah,
though.
It does. It plays 3 Aven Mind Sensors in place of those guys, which in a lot of contexts is just much better, right? It's a flyer. It's a flash card. It can catch them on their own fetch lands much better. I like this a lot.
There's one thing I don't like about this.
What's that?
There is a very distinct lack of Dark Confidant.
There is a lack of Dark Confidant. I think that is just a lack of space for that Dark Confidant, unfortunately.
I know. I just, whenever you're telling me that you're going to play a deck full of Grizzly Bears, I'm just interested in seeing you put some Dark Confidants in it, because he is the best of the Grizzly Bears.
Yeah.
But,
all right, let me go down the list here so the audience knows what we're talking about, too. This is 3 Thalia, Guardian of Thraven, of course, 4 Tidehelm Sculler, 3 Aven Mind Sensor, 3 Eldrazi Displacer, 3 Flicker Wisp, 3 Spell Queller, 3 Wasteland Strangler, 1 Glen Alendra Archmage, which is a 3 and a blue for a 2/2 flyer. Pay a blue, sacrifice it, and counter target non creature spell, and it has Persist. Fantastic card to reset with a Flicker Wisp. It's got 2 Hostage Takers. Okay, we're getting spicy now. 3 Thought Knot Seers, 4 Path to Exiles, 4 Aether Vials, a bunch of lands, including 3 Ghost Quarters, 3 Eldrazi Temples, and 2 Shambling Vents, excuse me.
Really? I think my favorite part about this whole deck is the 1 sideboard Dusk Dawn.
Yeah, that's a very good card.
So I'm going to murder your Tarmogoyfs.
Yeah.
All of them. Get your Tarmogoyfs out of here. And then after I kill all your Tarmogoyfs, at some point, I'm going to pick up my 11 2-power idiots and put them into my hand. And then cast a few of them and say, how do you like me now?
Yeah, that's pretty awesome, isn't it?
Yeah.
Not to mention, if they Liliana you, and you've got that in your graveyard, you can just cast the Dawn.
Yeah, absolutely. Just Dawn them, moving on with our life.
Yeah, it can never be thought seized. So that is very good against Jund. There are a lot of things in this deck that are just really great against those 3 decks that I've identified as the big problems. But what it does lack, it doesn't have a whole lot against Burn, other than the fact that it's just got creatures to block its creatures. And it's got Thalia that attacks its Burn spells.
I mean, you got Thalia that attacks Burn spells, you've got multiple Glen Alendra Archmages to use as counter spells later in the game after you start taxing them.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a Burrington Fortender that you can basically use as a counter spell.
Yeah, 1.
I mean, these are all like very minimal important things to be able to do. So, sure.
I would want to put some core Firewalkers in here, knowing how much burn there is. But maybe that wasn't the case in paper. Maybe that's just a Moto sort of thing, because the deck is so affordable. I don't know. Anyways, the biggest and most exciting interaction for me is the Hostage Takers. I mean, there's Hostage Taker is a card that has been fringe playable in Modern and seen some sideboard play in some Grixis decks. But Hostage Taker really shines when you've got your Aether Vial set to four counters, which this incentivizes because it also plays Thought Not Seer and Glen Alundra. You can flash him into play, and then you have all that mana left over to use his ability and put their creature into play. I mean, how great is that?
Fantastic.
It's awesome. And then even more, you can flash a Flicker Wisp into play, blink your Hostage Taker, and do it all over again. Ugh, that's so good. If you wanted to, you can process that exiled creature with a Wasteland Strangler.
Yeah. Which is pretty fancy. Just so you know, my computer might cut out because my daughter is microwaving something and it randomly kills my power if too many lights are on.
Whoops.
Yeah. But yeah, Wasteland Strangler in this deck is insane. Like, you have so many different functional ways to use it between Tidehollow Sculler, Eldrazi Display, or not Eldrazi Display, Flicker Wisp, and Toss a Shaker, and Thought Not Seer.
Yep.
That you're going to kill something. You're going to get your -3/-3 out of it. So.
Yeah, he does a lot of clever things with that Wasteland Strangler that a lot of white, black, Eldrazi, and Taxus X can't leverage. Spellqueller is another one that
exiles. Oh, I forgot about that card. Yeah.
Sometimes it's great to just Wasteland Strangler your own guys just to get rid of their spell that's exiled. You know.
Yeah, their spell is better.
Yeah.
Really, I think my favorite thing about Spellqueller is just spell quelling them and then like having that Aether Violent 3 instant speed Flicker Whisking their Spellqueller, and then they get back like a Remand or some dumb garbage.
Yeah.
And it's like, yep, that doesn't do anything. Sorry.
I did test this deck in one game before the podcast tonight, and I had Spellquellered their Supreme Verdict, which is obviously the best thing to do with that card, right? And I had a Thalia on the board, so they had to wait till turn 5 to play the Supreme Verdict in the first place, and then when he played it, I took it, right? Now, if I were to kill or blink my Spellqueller with Thalia on the board, he has an opportunity to cast Supreme Verdict for free. However, he cannot do it unless he pays one additional mana from Thalia, so it gets fizzled. Is that correct?
It actually stays in exile.
Stays in exile.
So you'll attempt to cast it, you can't. So it will stay in exile. Like, it's the same thing as when you remove the last counter from Ancestral Visions, if you stifle the trigger that happens to cast it, the Ancestral Visions just stays in exile.
So that's pretty
sweet. It never gets to unsuspend.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
Yeah.
That seems like a corner case, but in one game that I played with this deck, it came
also, up. Well, you also block it against Snapcaster, because like if you strand their Supreme Verdict in exile with Thalia, they can't Snapcast it. They never makes it back to their graveyard, like we would with Wasteland Strangler.
Yeah.
So that's actually pretty relevant, but like you never know when it's going to happen.
Yeah, no kidding. Now, there's not a lot of burn in either of these two events, so maybe my my read of the meta is a little different than reality. There is a lot of Jund, and there is a lot of Tron.
So this
way more Storm than I expected.
So there's a deck I want to talk about.
Yeah, what is it?
I'm going to put it on the screen. It's from the classic. It's Blue-Red Prison.
No, you would want to talk about that.
Oh, my God. This deck is great. This deck is everything I want in life. I'm going to roll down it, and I'm going to explain it for the folks at home. So we have a Tezzeret the Seeker, 4 Worm Invention, 2 Chalice of the Void, or 4 Chalice of the Void, 2 Engineering Explosives, 4 Mission Bauble, 4 Mox Opal, a Tormod Script, a Welding Jar, 3 maps, 3 Expedition maps, a Grafdigger's Gauge, a Pithy Needle, 2 Sorcerer's Spyglass, a Crucible of Worlds, 4 Ensnaring Bridge, a Bottled Cloister, which is a 4-mana artifact from Ravnica at the beginning of each opponent's upkeep. Remove your hand from the game face down. At the beginning of your upkeep, return all cards removed from game with Bottled Cloister to your
Oh, God. That's so cool.
So it completely and totally enables Ensnaring Bridge. So like, your bridge is always on 0 on your opponent's turn. If they kill the Bottled Cloister, you don't get your hand back.
Yeah, that's true.
Which is very important to note with that card. A Witchbane Orb, an Artificer's Intuition, which I don't think anyone knows what this does. So it's 1 to blue for an enchantment. Pay blue, discard an artifact from your hand. Search your library for an artifact card with CMC 1 or less. Reveal it, put it in your hand, shuffle your library. Agarra per Aether Druid, and then 23 lands. Academy Ruins, 4 Darksteel Citadel, a Field of Ruin, 4 Ghost Quarter, 2 Inventor's Fair, an Ipnu Rivulet, which is the new desert, the Blue Mill Desert, 3 Island, a Mountain, an Oboro, a Tech Edge, and 4 Teleri Wastes. And the sideboard is 3 Welding Jar, 2 Defense Grid, 2 Spellskite, 2 Sun Droplet, a Torpor Orb, another Aether Grid, 2 Metallic Rebuke, which is the improvised mana leak, another Tezzeret the Seeker, and a Possessed Portal, which is if a player would draw a card, that player skips that draw instead. At the end of each turn, each player sacrifices a permanent unless he or she discards a card from his or her hand.
Oh, I play that card in EDH sometimes. That's just brutal.
So, if you haven't really figured out what's happening here, it took me a minute to stare at the deck for a while to figure it out. So what's going on here? No, there's one very large and slow machination that's happening here. And that is that there are two ways to kill your opponent in this deck. There's a Garrett for Aether Grid, so tap all your artifacts that don't matter if they're untapped or not, to deal 1 damage to your opponent or their creatures or whatever. And then there's a single Ipnu Rivulet to mill your opponent out with. So you mill your opponent with the Ipnu Rivulet by sacrificing it. You play your 1 Crucible of Worlds. You get back your Ipnu Rivulet, and you keep doing that until your opponent dies.
Nice.
While you hide behind an Ensnaring Bridge and a Witchbane Orb.
I was wondering what that Ipnu Rivulet was doing in there.
It's your kill condition.
Yeah, I suppose.
You mill your opponent out, yeah. And then you have a single Tormod's Crypt in your deck to exile their graveyard when you hit their Ember Goal.
Nice.
You also have to reveal it yourself to find your pieces. If you've got the board locked up with some chalices and a bridge.
Yeah. That is pretty awesome. In the whole, like, what is it? Oh, shit. What's the card called? Expedition Map Package. There's a lot that you can do with that as well. If you're not just looking for your combo pieces, I mean, you can dig out, like, a Field of Ruin or Inventor's Fair or Tech Edge or Teleri Wastes.
There's 6 land destruction lands in this deck.
Yeah.
It actually helps it have some game against Tron. And you can also Chalice the Void to turn off all their, like, 1-drop things. So, I mean, you do turn off your 3 Expedition Map. You only turn off 5 of your cards, which are 3 Map, a Grafdigger's Cage, and a Pithy Needle. But you could just whir those cards into play.
Yes, you can.
So
this looks like a hell of a lot of fun to play. Not very fun to play against.
I don't know if this is fun. I don't know if this is my definition of a good time.
It's fun in its own maniacal way.
Yeah, this deck is something else. I'm
surprised we haven't had more decks that are just like Gear per Aether Grid engines. You know, in modern, there's a lot, yeah, like Ensnaring Bridge and Gear Per Aether Grid. There's a lot you can do with that, you know, like, a lot of artifact decks will play, Hauling Mine, for example, and that's a card that is incentivizes you to tap your artifacts, right? So things like that. Just a corner case, of course, but this has plenty of gas for such a thing, and that card is just really, really good at killing everything that's a problem.
So Aether Grid used to be how I won the game with eggs shortly after they released it.
Yeah.
When they unbanned Thopter Foundry. Because you'd use Thopter Foundry to make infinite mana, like Thopter Sword, with your Karklan Ironworks.
Yeah.
And then you tap all the Thopters to Aether Grid to kill your opponent.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Sweet. So that is also an option you have available to you. But, like, this is adorable, and I'm kind of horrified by it.
Do you think this is going to be replicated in...
Two people have already 5-0'd with it on Modo.
Have they really? Oh, okay, so this is maybe something that has existed and just kind of flying under the radar. I did not notice that. I see 3, actually, 3 5-0's.
Yeah, two different people. One guy did it twice.
Oh, then, gotcha. Interesting.
And then another player did it again. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. This deck is sweet. I don't think anyone's going to enjoy ever playing against it, but I kind of want to play it. Have most of the cards for it. I don't have the bridges.
Yeah, there's a lot of expensive cards in there.
Oldmanchurch.com, baby, let's go.
Yeah. Now, I haven't mentioned this, and I would be remiss to close out this cast without saying that humans is also a huge part of this metagame. There's a lot of humans. So Ensnaring Bridge decks are pretty strong right now. There's not a lot that humans can do against such a deck, aside from, you know, like hoping into their like if they play Reclamation Sage or something along those lines. I know that a lot of them play like Kataki War's Wage in the side, but there's not so much actually that humans play, can do.
Vithian Renegade is what it is. It's a green red one for like a 3/2 effect.
I haven't seen a lot of that in these decks, but okay, Vithian Renegades. Some of them have it, but yeah. There's one Vithian Renegades in the sideboard of this deck. So
that's not a lot. They'll mostly be leaning on their Kitesail Freebooters to take your bridges before you get them into play. But when you have four bridges and four Wurs, you have a gazillion bridges.
Yeah, a gazillion, literally.
Yeah, an actual gazillion bridges.
All right. Well, I think things went better since we have disabled my face from this podcast. So thanks for hanging in there till the end.
Thank you for doing faceless, Corey. I'm going to do a quick non-magic moment before we sign off.
Yeah, what is it?
I don't know if you've heard of this game yet by Megacrit. It's called Slay the Spire.
Video game or board game?
A video game.
Okay, go on. Have not.
So do you like deck building games?
Yes.
Do you like roguelike games?
Yes.
It's both of them put together.
Oh shit. And it got a 10 out of 10, very positive reviews.
Yeah. I literally bought it. One of my friends was like, dude, it's great. You gotta play it with us. So I hopped on Discord and I watched him play a game of it or whatever. And I'm like, alright, this game's gas, I'm gonna buy it. So I bought it. And I don't even know what time I bought it on like a Saturday.
Yeah.
But I look up and my fiance is just staring at me and she's like, are you okay? Like, I really want to spend time with you. And I'm like, what do you mean? I've only been playing this game for like 2 hours. I looked at the clock, it was midnight. I'm like, oh, I've been playing this game for a lot longer than 2 hours. So the game is amazing. If you have not played it, please do. If you have, how do you beat it with there's two factions. There's like a red faction, it's all about like strength. And there's like a rogues, like sneaky faction. I've crushed the game with the red faction. I can't figure out the green ones to save my life. They're like, they have less hit points and they try to do like fancy weird stuff. And I'm too dumb to play it. It's like the best deck I've drafted with them is like a storm deck and I still can't figure it out. So like, well, I would check that game out if you like roguelikes and deck builders.
Yeah, that sounds like a lot of fun. Speaking of deck builders, and while we're on the topic of non-magic, I picked up Clank in Space this last weekend. Yeah. Have you ever played that game? Any of the Clank games, kind of the same idea. Similarly, it is a deck builder that has an exploration element to it. And Clank in Space is different because it has a modular board that you can kind of flip over the tiles and have sort of different connections to them. It's got like a lot of rules. It seemingly has a lot of rules, but if it's taught to someone, it can be taught with just a few rules to start and kind of expanded on as the game progresses. So that's kind of the good news. But this is the sequel to Clank. I think it's just called Clank the Original, which is like a dungeon explorer to like go and slay a dragon. But the premise is you are a character that is put on a ship of the evil lord something Triss. He destroys everything, he's bad.
Lord Farquaad, got it.
Yeah, all Lord right. Farquaad. And your job is to go and infiltrate the ship, and steal one of like six options for artifacts that are on the ship. Each of them has like a different point value ranging from like 5 to 30. Obviously more points is better. But when you go for the higher point value ones, you're risking more, you know, because you're going deeper into the ship and you have to get out of the ship too. He's gonna like attack you as you go through the ship because you basically cause clank, which is sound. You're basically being clunky and making noise when you're trying to explore the ship. And the more sound you make, the more aware of him, more aware of you he is. And so every once in a while when he attacks, you have to draw one of the cubes out of this bag. And if your cube is drawn, that's functionally a damage on your character. And so you have cards that represent like attack and buy like every deck builder does, but then there's also a movement card that lets you move from space to space on the ship. And so there's tons of loot that you can acquire. There are different things that you can purchase throughout the game and lots of different options as far as how you explore, but it's a hell of a game. It's a lot of fun. 2 to 4 players, takes about an hour. I'd recommend
it. Nice. I'll check it out. So, all right. We're done being weird nerds that don't talk about Magic anymore. I think that ends the podcast.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
Take it easy.
Take it easy, everybody.
Next time.
Yeah.
Card Knock Life is proud to be a part of MTGcast.com. We can be reached at cardknocklifepodcast.com or on Twitter at card_knock_life. We're always looking for more help in generating content for the website. And if you'd be interested in doing so, please email at cardknocklifepodcast@gmail.com.